Hi everybody, this is Alice, and today I'm going to share with you some selected submissions that came in for our 2020 6th Annual NICE Project. That's our Noblesville Interdisciplinary Creativity Expo, which is our annual classic literature-based project. Our books this year were Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, Gone with the Wind by Margaret Mitchell, Dracula by Bram Stoker, and Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. Today, I want to share just a few of the submissions we received for Dracula. We always ask that people create new pieces of artwork of any kind inspired by the passages that we select for each of our four books. If you're watching the video of this or you've been on our website, you'll see a few images of paintings that came in inspired by our Dracula passage. First, I want to share with you the passage that we chose from Dracula. It's a little bit longer than our normal passages, but we loved this whole section so much we had to just pick the entire passage. It's from chapter 3. But at that instant, another sensation swept through me as quick as lightning. I was conscious of the presence of the Count, and of his being as if lapped in a storm of fury. As my eyes opened involuntarily, I saw his strong hand grasp the slender neck of the fair woman, and with giant's power draw it back, the blue eyes transformed with fury, the white teeth champing with rage, and the fair cheeks blazing red with passion. But the Count! Never did I imagine such wrath and fury, even to the demons of the pit. His eyes were positively blazing. The red light in them was lurid, as if the flames of hell fire blazed behind them. His face was deathly pale, and the lines of it were hard, like drawn wires. The thick eyebrows that met over the nose now seemed like a heaving bar of white-hot metal. With a fierce sweep of his arm, he hurled the woman from him, and then motioned to the others as though he were beating them back. It was the same imperious gesture that I had seen used to the wolves. In a voice which, though low and almost in a whisper, seemed to cut through the air, then ring in the room, he said, "How dare you touch him, any of you? How dare you cast eyes on him when I had forbidden it? Back, I tell you all, this man belongs to me. Beware how you meddle with him, or you'll have to deal with me." The fair girl, with a laugh of ribald coquetry, turned to answer him, "You yourself never loved. You never love." On this the other women joined, and such a mirthless, hard, soulless laughter rang through the room that it almost made me faint to hear. It seemed like the pleasure of fiends. Then the Count turned, after looking at my face attentively, and said in a soft whisper, "Yes, I too can love. You yourselves can tell it from the past. Is it not so? Well, now I promise you that when I am done with him, you shall kiss him at your will. Now go, go! I must awaken him, for there is work to be done." Now I want to share with you a poem that came in by poet Marlene Million. It's called Immortal Passion. Deep in the night, dark whispers of passion shiver up my spine and swirl like Dracula's cape. His dark mahogany mane caresses his collar. Bewitching, penetrating eyes perplex my soul. His beguiling smile tantalizes my lush dreams, engulfing me in reverie. Hovering over the precipice of delirious dither, I'm mesmerized, aware of a red rose emerging through murky mist of shadows enticing me to an outspread black cloak. I'm held spellbound by the wizardry of lips now kissing my pale pink throat. A mystical mirror reflects my haunting view, and cold hands undrape earthly garments. Once bitten, fantasy flows as two mingle, spinning amid clouds towards eternity. Now I'll read for you an essay titled On Collective Nouns by Vivian Bell. A shrewdness of apes, a cloud of bats, a drift of bees, a glaring of cats, a murder of crows, a piteousness of doves, a memory of elephants, a trip of goats, a watch of nightingales, a parliament of owls, a shiver of sharks, a lamentation of swans, a knot of toads, a dazzle of zebras. Man, collective nouns for our creature friends are fun, aren't they? The odder the better, like the above list of some of my favorites. They're fun to say, they're fun to envision literally, and they're fun to muse upon metaphorically. I mean, a memory of elephants yields a ghostly poignancy, does it not? I've been thinking a lot about collective nouns lately, in part because of the book Dracula, published in 1897, written by Bram Stoker. It's a favorite book of mine and has been since childhood. Both the supernatural and romantic elements in the story called to me at a young age, and I fell under its spell. It's an eternal romance played out over space and time between a powerful supernatural creature and a human soul, a beautiful woman reincarnated and destined to find her inhuman soulmate. Well, yes, I was enthralled. Count Dracula himself started life as a human in the 1400s, centuries before the book's main story takes place. But because he cursed God after his beloved wife Elisabetta committed suicide, he transforms into something not human. He becomes a supernatural creature, a vampire, a monster. Dracula entices his conquests, both male and female. He seduces them all with his supernatural powers of persuasion, his charisma, and his lies and manipulations. Dracula's only goal is human blood, and his thirst for blood is elemental as part of his seduction of humans. Dracula's desire for human blood is written in romantic and sexually charged language by Stoker, who writes those romantic passages that are all about sensations and possession, belonging to, as in being owned by another, control, conquest, and other words and phrases that in 1897 were, and still are, synonyms and euphemisms for sex. The word kiss is used for the act of blood-sucking by Dracula in Chapter 3, where he also uses a phrase that I love, the pleasure of fiends. When I first read this book in my childhood, that phrase conjured up imagery for me and transformed into a collective noun phrase, a pleasure of fiends. Quite literally, human blood is the necessary source for Dracula's own survival. His human conquests mean nothing to him other than that they are the mechanism of his survival. Dracula's human conquests are his victims, yes, but they embrace their horrible fates willingly. That's the amazing part of the story. Dracula cannot take that which is not freely given to him, especially not blood. Over and over, across continents and hundreds of years, Dracula's victims willingly give themselves over to him, knowing he's literally going to suck the blood from their bodies, knowing that they will die. I know what you're thinking. Dracula's victims are manipulated and ensorcelled by his supernatural powers. Therefore, they cannot be willing. True. But in the story, they have opportunities to break away, to turn away, to reject the count, and some do exactly that. They are survivors. However, far too many, especially the young women in the story, do not survive. Enraptured, they give in to the seductive fairy tale of being with Dracula forever. Most of them are seduced and tricked by Dracula into believing they are special to him. Sadly for those women, there's only one special woman in Dracula's long life, Elisabetta, who Dracula believes has been reincarnated as Mina. Mina, after first resisting, eventually embraces the, quote, fact, unquote, that she is Elisabetta's reincarnation, and willingly she gives in to the fairy tale of one true love forever. Ah, romance! Dracula and Elisabetta/Mina personify a love eternal. And Dracula seems rather heroic in his centuries-long quest to reunite with his one true forever love. We forgive his monstrous behavior because it's all dressed up in such romantic words and ideals. Who doesn't yearn for a love eternal? It's almost a universal desire, especially for girls and women in Western cultures. We're raised on the seductive fairy tale of one true forever love. It's our expectation and our curse. As we girls grow older, most of us learn the hard way how rare it is to actually live that fairy tale fantasy. But we're willing to give almost anything for the possibility of it, the hint of it. So we keep trying to live that elusive romance to find our forever soulmate. Sometimes we find ourselves enthralled and seduced by something else, something more inhuman, more horrible, something monstrous. We find ourselves trapped in abusive relationships with our own Draculas, relationships that started as romantic fairy tales. Mentally and emotionally, we dress up these monsters in heroic costumes straight out of romantic fairy tales, don't we? Often keeping them in those costumes long after their true monstrous natures are revealed. There are countless of these all-too-human monsters walking among us today. These modern-day life-sucking vampires are intent on possession, owning, control, and conquest. Just as Dracula needed human blood to survive, the survival of these monsters depends upon their need to feel sensations of powerful control over their victims. Male or female, these monsters seduce us with their powers of persuasion, their charisma, and their lies and manipulations. All too often, the victims of these monsters, like Dracula's victims, give themselves over willingly. Which brings me back to my thoughts on collective nouns. Inspired by Bram Stoker's wonderful book Dracula, I'll add to my list A Pleasure of Fiends and A Seduction of Monsters. Join us next time as we continue our discussion in our four nice books, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula.